So, words have limitations. We have to talk about things, but we have problems defining things. We have problems describing or defining an orange, saying what love is. So how much more complex is it to start talking about the nature of reality? Yeah, big R reality. How on earth are we going to start talking about that? If you look at the earliest Buddhist text that we've got, the Buddha said almost nothing about the goal, as it were, about the nature of reality. He said an awful lot about the path. He said a lot you do. But when he talked about the goal, he said very little, I think. Well, certainly Sangharakshita argues that the Buddha avoided saying very much about the goal of the spiritual life, the goal of the Dharma, as the Dharma life, because the risk is of misunderstanding. You know, in a way, anything that you say is going to fall short, and people will take it literally. So he used symbols and synonyms. He talked about enlightenment as the cool cave. It's talked about as it's being like released from prison. It's like having been in great debt and had somebody paying it off for you. So these senses of release or freedom from an oppression or something like that. But he said very little. So he gave metaphors of how it might, in a way, of how it might feel. Very little conceptual about it. Very little about it. In fact, the Buddha said that reality was beyond concepts. The phrase is something like anuttaravanacha or something like that, but I'm afraid I can't quite remember. Vachana, something like that. Which literally means beyond conceptualization. Which effectively means beyond words. Beyond words. Because largely, although not exclusive, largely we conceive of things, we think about things with words. We use the structures of words for our concepts. Not entirely, but usually, mainly. So the nature of reality, the enlightenment experience, can't be fully summed up in words. But nevertheless, we seem to like to try and talk about it. It seems to be something we want to talk about. We want to try and understand, try and apprehend, at least to some extent. And so that's what we're going to be looking at. We're going to be looking at, over the next goodness knows how many weeks, one particular attempt at that. So we're going to be looking at what's colloquially known as the Heart Sutra. Its full name is the Prajna Paramita Hridaya Sutra. So Prajna is wisdom, Paramita is something like perfection, literally something like that which carries across, or that which takes beyond. Hridayam is heart. So it's the heart of perfect wisdom. And so the Heart Sutra is one of a whole body of texts called the Perfection of Wisdom, called the Prajnaparamita texts, which it's a Mahayana text, so it's from the middle period of the evolution of Buddhism, and it's kind of they're rather self-referential. They go on about themselves being Perfection of Wisdom texts quite a lot, Prajnaparamita texts, so they're sort of self-consciously Prajnaparamita texts. It's not like they just happen to be like that. So, just a brief recap in terms of Buddhist history. For some of you, it'll be relatively new. For some of you, it'll be rather old hat. But generally speaking, when we talk about Buddhism, it's usually talked about as having had three major phases of evolution, with a possible fourth phase going on at the moment. So, the period in the first 500 years after the Buddha's death is the period of early Buddhism. Characterized by the texts recorded in the Pali Canon, generally speaking. The second 500-year phase is the phase of the Mahayana, the phase of the great vehicle, where the Bodhisattva ideal comes up. You move away from the ideal of seeking personal salvation, which is the way in which the Buddha talks about. The Buddha mainly talks about the path, the Dharma, in terms of one's own escape from suffering. Yeah? So freedom from negative mental states, a sort of path of freedom in a way for the individual. The second period of Buddhism, the Mahayana, the emphasis shifts very much towards working for the benefit of all. Yeah? So rather than just practicing the Dhamma because it will make your life better, but actually doing it because it will make everybody's life better. Yeah? You work on yourself so as to be a better resource to help other people work on themselves. And then the third phase of 500 years or so is the phase of the Vajrayana, so the phase of sort of magical transformation, which builds on the same basic bodhisattva ideal principle, but comes at it from, Robert Thurman talks about as a high-tech approach to the transformation of the psyche. He talks about the meditations of the Vajrayana as high-tech psychonautics, if that means anything to you. So rather than being an astronaut, one who journeys in the psyche and uses the tools of the Tantra to create a radical transformation. Yeah. The term, originated by Anagarika Govinda, actually, the psychonaut. It's a nice word, isn't it?
It's quite fancy. When I grow up, I'm going to be a psychonaut. It's either that or a milkman.
Now, as with all broad classifications, it's wrong. Yeah? That's not quite how it all worked. The Mahayana started developing quite a lot earlier than 500 years before Christ, certainly at least 100 years before that. So the Buddha was around roughly 500 years before the start of the Common Era, the start of around about the time of Christ. And the perfection of sutra, perfection of wisdom texts began being created around about 100 years before the start of the Common Era. And in the first couple of hundred years, a couple of big texts arose. The earliest one that we know of is called The Perfection of Wisdom in 8,000 Lines. And my understanding of this, I was trying to check this, my understanding is that the oldest existing book in the world, which dates from around 100 years before Christ, is a copy of The Perfection of Wisdom in 8,000 Lines. So that period went on for a couple of hundred years. And then for a couple of hundred years after that, these texts got longer, they got elaborated on, and bigger versions came out of them. Although at the same time, there was the odd bit of condensation. So the Diamond Sutra that I referred to earlier, The Perfection of Wisdom That Cuts by a Diamond. Now this is the oldest printed book in the world. Yeah? So the oldest printed book in the world, it's actually in the British Museum, was printed on the 11th of May, 868 of the Common Era, I don't think. In China, and it's a copy of the Diamond Sutra, the Prajnaparamita Vajracchedika Sutra. There's a bit of me that gets quite proud of it. We did the first books. It's childish, but I like it. So then there's another couple of years of kind of the Perfection of Wisdom text sort of contracting, becoming more concise. And it's in this period that the Heart of Perfect Wisdom was developed, the Prajnaparamita Hridaya Sutra, which is said to be a sort of a concentrated form of a distillation, that's the word, isn't it, of a text called, you ready? The Pancha Vimsati Sahaskrita Prajnaparamita Sutra. And so that's, yeah, so the Heart Sutra is said to be the sort of the core of the whole thing. Yeah? There's an American academic, a woman called Jan Natia, who has in the last decade or so, her suggestion is actually that the Heart Sutra wasn't originally written in Sanskrit. Yeah? Most of this stuff was written in Sanskrit. The earlier stuff was written in sort of Indian languages, which with Sanskrit influences, and then revised to sort of be in proper Sanskrit. This lady Natia suggests that it's a slightly weird thing in that the Heart Sutra, which is meant to be this distillation of this longer sutra with a complicated name. Actually, if you look at the longer sutra, it says completely different things to the Heart Sutra. So, for example, it says that form and emptiness are different things, whereas the Heart Sutra says that form and emptiness are the same thing. And her idea is actually, she thinks, and her textual analysis suggests, that the Heart Sutra is probably originally written in Chinese and subsequently translated back into Sanskrit. That's her theory. And nobody's saying, no, that's complete nonsense, as far as I can tell. So that was news to me today. The last, sort of between the year 500 and 1000 of the Common Era, what happened is the Pranayaparamita texts start to get sort of, start to integrate with the Tantra, with the Vajrayana, with this sort of magical, transformative texts. And you get a whole bunch of deeply, deeply profound and difficult to understand without a teacher, sort of tantric Pranayaparamita texts. You can already see the beginning of that in the Heart Sutra, actually, because it builds up the sort of crescendo, as it were, at the end of the Heart Sutra is a mantra, isn't it? Yeah. And the earliest stage of the Vajrayana is called the Mantrayana. Yeah? Tantric Buddhism began with mantras, in a way. So you can see that there's this distillation, the distillation of the distillation, as it were, you know, the heart of perfect wisdom is the Pranayaparamita mantra. So there's already this sort of influence of the Vajrayana there. Yeah. I'm sorry, the Buddhism history lesson is only going to go on for a little bit longer. Yeah, and we'll start looking a bit at the text. Because I do have to tell you about the shortest of all Buddhist scriptures. Yeah, this is the perfection of wisdom in one letter. Yeah, and the letter is? A. The letter is A. Because A is a negative suffix. Yeah, so it's a bit like, you know, in English we put in at the beginning of the word, or sometimes we put A at the beginning of the word to make it a negative, don't we? Asexual, for example. So the idea, the perfection of wisdom texts are this class of scripture, and what they do is they negate all of the Buddhist concepts in a way. Yeah. The way in which all Buddhism talks about itself. What it says is that you can't take any of the ways in which Buddhism talks absolutely literally. Yeah? They're all only relatively true. At an absolute level, they're all inaccurate. Yeah? This is based on seeing all phenomena as empty, yeah? The Dharma Shunyata position. So all phenomena are empty of an inherent selfhood. They're insubstantial, they're impermanent. Yeah, and that includes all Buddhist teachings, yeah, and all of the categories that Buddhism divides our experience into. And so the perfection of wisdom just sort of says not, in a way. Yeah, not. Turns into an American teenager, basically. Yeah. So anything you can say about anything is not literally true. Can be negated, in a way. Perhaps, yeah. The reason being that we desperately, desperately, desperately want certainty in our lives. We want to be able to hang on to things. We want to know that this is definitely the case. This is definitely the right way to practice. This is definitely the right sort of Buddhism. This is definitely a very wobbly lectern. Yeah? And we have to let go. We have to let go.